Reading from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Purva Vibhag, Pratam Lahari, First Wave, First Division, Samanya Bhakti, text number 11. Hanyabilashita shunyam jnanakar madhyana britam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktiruttama. Yesterday we were continuing to discuss the srup lakshana of bhakti, which is the second part of the verse, anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttam. In the definition of uttam bhakti, there is the intrinsic characteristic, the main, the root, the basis of bhakti. Turn it up, turn it down, turn it up, off, off. Not sure.
Radio frequency.
You have a mobile phone?
Yeah.
Not sure.
Someone else?
I see. Where is it plugged in, the first hole on the left? Wait a minute. Turn it up. Take the plug out in the back. It's charging. You have to take it out when it's charging. You can't turn it on. Everything's okay. Just take that. Yeah. Now back to where you were. No. You don't have to. Yeah, as long as it's out of the machine. Oh. Radhe, Radhe. So we're discussing the srup lakshana, uttam bhakti. Rupa Goswami is saying, anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. So these are the main characteristics. That is anushilanam, it's cultivation or continuous activity with the body, mind, and words, and it's done for the pleasure of Krishna, Radhe Radhe. And anukulyena means it's favorably done. In other words, our intention. What is our intention? Because our words may be engaged, our mind may be engaged, our body may be engaged in activities to please Krishna. They are activities to please Krishna, and they may be even pleasing to Krishna. But what is our mind? What is our attitude? What is our intention? That's why Jiva Goswami, in his purport, he gave the example of the wrestlers in Mathura. They were using their bodies and their minds and their words to serve Krishna. They were calling him dirty names, and it was rousing his fighting spirit. So he was fighting with them, and Krishna was getting pleasure from fighting with the wrestlers in Kamsa's arena. But what was their attitude? What was their intention? What was their actual heart? In their heart, their intention was to kill Krishna. So therefore, this is unfavorable. This is not the type of bhakti we want to practice. And we're serving Krishna. Just for example, like someone may take employment in someone's house, a servant. And he serves very nicely. He's very humble and very respectful. And he's serving very nicely. He's trying to gain the confidence of the master. He's a very wealthy master. But what is in his heart? Which he's not revealing. In his heart, he's thinking, once I gain the confidence of my master, and he reveals to me where his hidden treasures are, I'm going to poison him. I'm going to poison him, kill him, and take all his money and treasures. So this, his intention is evil, or is contrary to the benefit of the master. So that's why it's very important that some people may be doing bhakti, but their intention is for themselves. Like they may be rendering some, they may be going and collecting money. When they're collecting money for the temple, to build a new temple. So that's pleasing to Krishna, to get a new temple. But their intention, why they're collecting money, is because they also get 5-10% of the collections for themselves.
More.
Or whatever. More. So their intention is, they're thinking, I'm collecting this money, but most, not so much to please Krishna, but to please myself. So that attitude or intention. So that's why he's qualifying all the different aspects of what is uttam bhakti. So we have a checks and balance system or standard by which we can actually examine the quality of our devotion, the external expression of our devotion, and the internal intention. What is our intention? What is the position of our heart and our mind when we're serving Krishna? Because this is the swarup lakshana, the main characteristic of uttam bhakti. Then in the first part of the verse, which is how it's analyzed, Jiva Goswami's purport, he says that the first part of the verse, which is mentioned first, that's actually Tatastha Lakshana. Anya Bilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam. These are the secondary characteristics of bhakti. And actually, just to retrace our steps, when he was saying Anukalyena Krishna Anushilanam, he said because Anushilana means practice, it means Cheshta and Bhava, which are some technical terms which I didn't mention the other day. But Cheshta means the actual thinking or planning, and Bhava is the attitude or the mood. So Cheshta, because in any activity we gain some knowledge, we develop desire, so it's called Gyan, then Icha, Cheshta, and then Kriya. We gain some knowledge about something, say knowledge of cooking. We study some cookbooks, or we go to some cooking classes, and we receive knowledge of cooking. And then when we receive that knowledge, then desire arises. If there's no knowledge, either within ourselves of some object or gaining from outside, if we have no knowledge about something, we won't have any desire for that thing. If someone says, "Oh, why don't you go to Hawaii? Why don't you go to Hawaii?" And you say, "Why? I don't have any desire to go to Hawaii." But then someone gives you so many books about Hawaii and so many pictures and they show you movies, and then you get knowledge about Hawaii, about the climate, about the people, about the festivals, about the topography and the varied features of nature that may be there, and the mountains and rivers and volcanoes and ocean beach and waves and other things. Then with that knowledge will come sometimes a desire. Then from that desire comes, from that icha, or desire, comes cheshta. Cheshta means, you can say, internal planning, or let's say reflection, reflecting. You have the desire, then you start thinking, yes, maybe I should go to Hawaii. That means desire. Expressing a desire. Maybe I should move to Hawaii. And then you start thinking over that. Well, the pros and minuses, they say pro and con, plus and minuses. Well, if I move there, I'll be so far away from Vrindavan and the Giriraj is so far away. But then I can just pretend. But then the other side of your mind says, but no, I can just live near some mountain. And then I can pretend that mountain is Govardhan Hill and I can walk around that mountain. I said, no, but that's not the same. So then there's some rivers there. So I can pretend, well, those rivers are the Yamuna, and then swim in those rivers. So this is Cheshta. There's Icha, desire, and then Cheshta, then Kriya. So when Rupa Goswami is describing the main characteristic of Uttam Bhakti, he's saying Krishna Anushilanam. Because oftentimes, as we mentioned the other day, people say, oh, I'm doing Shiva Bhakti, or I'm doing this Bhakti or that Bhakti. But Rupa Goswami wants to specify that this Anushilanam means this practice, this cultivation, these activities with the mind and senses and words, are specifically meant for Krishna. And this is the meaning of Uttam Bhakti. Because oftentimes people use this term Bhakti, as I mentioned, to refer to some demigod or whatever. So he says Uttam Bhakti, what we're defining as Uttam Bhakti, is activities for the pleasure of Krishna or his avatars. Like someone, for example, they may be a Ram Bhakta. So then you can ask the question, well, if he's a devotee of Lord Ram, is he doing Uttam Bhakti? And Sri Rupa Goswami or Jiva Goswami is saying, yes, he can also be considered, if his practices meet the parameters of this definition, even a Ram Bhakta can also be doing Uttam Bhakti. Right? Because Ram is a form of Krishna. So Uttam Bhakti specifically applies to Krishna or his different avatars. But for our intention, and the intention of Rupa Goswami, is Krishna Anushilanam, not Rama Anushilanam or Vishnu or Nisringa Anushilanam, because our Ishtadeva is Krishna, Radha and Krishna. So the Tatastha Lakshana, as I mentioned, is the secondary characteristics. The first thing he says, Anyabhilashita. So in the secondary, these tatastha lakshana, these are the outward expressions or the extrinsic characteristics. The tatastha lakshana defines the characteristics that are not part of the nature of uttam bhakti. In other words, they are what bhakti isn't. The tatastha lakshana are secondary characteristics which act to modify, or you can say refine, the primary characteristics. And they distinguish pure devotional service from ordinary devotional service. Because ordinary devotional service, which ordinary means not uttam bhakti, could be performed, you could be doing something anushilanam, you could be engaged in activities with your body, mind, and senses for Krishna's pleasure and with the proper attitude. And anukalyena, it could be done to make Krishna happy in a favorable way, to make him feel satisfied. But still, there could be coverings. There could be coverings of your bhakti. Avritam. Avritam means coverings. There could be covered with some gyan or karma, like we were mentioning the other day. Oftentimes, devotees are very sincere and they're very acting very nicely in devotional service, but they're actually, their bhakti is covered by gyan. And what is the shape of that gyan? Their bhakti is covered by a desire for salokya mukti. Salokya mukti means to live on the same planet as the Lord. Because when we say, like sometimes, I remember one lady, Godbrother's wife was dying, and everyone came there to her when she was departing, and she said, she asked all the Vaishnavas, please bless me. Please bless me that I don't have to take birth again. I don't have to take another birth. Because this life was so much terrible. Or sometimes people when they die, they say, please bless me that I can go back to Godhead. Or we say, I want to go back to Godhead. So Godhead means, or they say, I want, what is your aim and ambition in life? Oh, I want to go to the spiritual world. I want to live on Krishna's planet. I want to live, and this is a very common thing. So this means we're doing bhakti, but we're actually hankering for liberation. You don't meet very many devotees. So what is your ambition? My ambition is to take birth again next life in Moscow and do bhakti. What, are you crazy? Moscow? What are you? So wherever Krishna wants to place me, I'm not really concerned about where I take birth. I am only concerned that I want to be with devotees or engage in bhakti. And we get the proper adjustment of our mind by studying Shastra and studying the lives and teachings of the Acharyas. Because they're living amongst us. And they're growing and living amongst us. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Kita Janma Hao, he says, I don't care if I'm born as an insect. Kita means insect, or Kira, Kira, Kita. Kita Janma Hao, let me take birth as an insect. But if I'm going to be a bug, please, oh my Lord, if you arrange my next life, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaking, this is not some blooper from the New York Temple or something. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He's saying, if your will is that I take birth as an insect in my next life, I would like to put a small request, if possible, that I could take birth as an insect in the home of a devotee. So that I could have some kind of contact with bhakti. So what he's essentially saying is, I just want bhakti. I certainly don't care about back to Godhead or this planet or that planet. I'm prepared to take birth anywhere, but I want some connection with bhakti. Because this is actually the only aim and ambition of a devotee, is I want to do service. I want bhakti. I want to serve the Lord. As an insect, I'll serve the Lord. How will I serve the Lord as an insect? Well, when the devotees get so excited about eating prasad, and they drop so many crumbs here and there, I'll make sure that no one steps on those crumbs, because those crumbs and particles of prasadam are also you, Krishna. They're also your sarup. And you're also there, so I'll eat them so fast. I'll come out and eat them that no one will step on you later. That will be my service. So like in this place we have so many ants, and within a second after, and I'll make sure devotees don't eat too much or eat for very long. Because as soon as they sit down to eat, like thousands of ants will run out from somewhere and surround the devotee. And so he gets really nervous. He says, oh, I better eat fast, because if I wait any longer, all the ants will be all over my plate. So in this way, the devotees will help the ant, bhakta ant, Bhakta Ant and the other devotees in the insects' bodies, they will help the devotees not to eat too much or eat too long or whatever. So in this way, they'll render service. So this is an example how the primary characteristic or the sarup lakshana of bhakti, rutam bhakti, can be covered or influenced by the secondary elements of jnana and karma. Jnana karma dhyaramvritam. And it's very pernicious and very subtle, because we think, oh, I'm a good devotee. But you interview many devotees. What is your aim? What is your ambition? What do you want? And most, at least in the West, what I found, even amongst myself, until I came to understand what the actual proper goal was or is, goal is, and what we should actually think about, is that most of us have the idea we're actually salvationists. We want salvation. We want mukti. Either we want samipya mukti, we want to live on the planet with Krishna. But for a bhakta, a bhakta is only concerned, as I mentioned earlier in the class, a bhakta is only concerned about service. I simply want the prem seva of Radha and Krishna. And whatever they arrange for me, that's up to them. And I gave the example of the servant who comes to the master's house, and he knocks on the door and says, "Mr. Smith, I'm here. I want to surrender to you. I just want to serve you day and night." And then Mr. Smith says, "Well, do you want money? Or do you want clothes? Do you want a house? No, I don't want anything. I just want to serve you." And Mr. Smith will think, "Are you crazy?" He said, no, I'm attracted to you. I'm captivated by you. I'm enchanted by you. Your nam and your roop and your Mr. Smith, that name Mr. Smith just makes my hair stand on end. And your form is so attractive, and your qualities, I've heard about you, and I've read about you in the newspapers, and your different pastimes, you know, going to work and watering your lawn and, you know, playing, you know,
washing your car
and watching TV. Your pastimes are so attractive that I just want to serve you day and night. And I don't want anything. As long as I can serve you now and even in the next life, if I can just live here forever and serve you, I'll be happy. So then what will Mr. Smith think after he thinks, if he decides you're not crazy and you're actually sincere and you're actually transparent and don't have anything else, no ulterior objective? He may be interviewing in different ways and use psychology and analysis and try to find out what you're actually all about. And after he concludes his survey and investigation, if he decides, actually, this person is 100% sincere, they're actually anyabhi lashita shunyam, jnana karmadhyan avritam. They have no other coverings or ulterior motives. Okay, come. So now once that master accepts the servant as his own servant, then what will he do for him? He'll make all arrangements, right? He'll give him food. He'll give him clothing. He'll give him a place to sleep. He'll give him medicine. And he'll arrange for whatever he needs. And then when he's about to die, he'll make arrangements. "Look, you're about to die. I'll make arrangements that you come back next life and you serve me some more." So in this analogy is exactly, this is like pure bhakti, that this servant has pure bhakti for his mundane master. He's not saying, "Well, I'll serve you for my whole life as long as I can go back to Godhead at the end." As long as there's something in it, as long as there's something for me besides serving you. That's called jnana karma dhyanavritam. The coverings of jnana and karma. And we, at least we can say we, meaning I, as Prabhupada always would speak of first person as we, plural. So we have so much of this avritam, so much coverings of jnana and karma. Jnana also means to kick back and just merge into the space. To be lazy, that's also jnana. It's a type of merging when you don't want to do anything. I need a vacation from bhakti. I want to merge into the free zone of leisure time. Merge into the free zone of free space. Do my own thing. That's the Mayavadi. They want to merge into the effulgence of the Lord and do their own thing, which means nothing. Their own thing is no thing. Shunyavad. Their thing is no thing. Nothing. No thing means nothing. So we can dive deeper into this ocean of tattastha lakshana. This is what bhakti isn't. Ordinary devotional activities. Ordinary devotional service is activities intended to please Krishna. But pure devotional service, uttam bhakti, is also free from all ulterior motives and desires. That means personal ambitions or desires. Ulterior means like, also means like hidden. How would you say ulterior? Hidden, like hidden. You're not revealing it. Like we have exterior, interior. Ulterior is something like interior, but it has kind of a negative connotation, whereas interior may not necessarily have negative connotation. But ulterior means there's some mischief there. There's some kapat. There's some cheating mixed in. So it's called ulterior. And because in Hindi, ulta means upside down. Like we say ulta. So ulterior. Ulterior means there's your desire, there's some upside down aspect. Outside you're saying, oh, I'm your friend, I'm going to help you. But the upside down idea of that desire is, yes, I desire to help you step on that ice and break your neck. You know, slip and fall. So this is some ulterior motive. So pure devotional service is free from that, and it's not covered by philosophical or fruitive pursuits. Tattvastha lakshana means that which further distinguishes an object or person by describing qualities outside its fundamental nature. So bhakti is pure bhakti, uttam bhakti is this, anukulyena krishnanu shilanam. And now, things that are outside of that, which are some coverings, because if you take anukulya, favorableness, or anushilanam, cultivation activities done with the proper intention, if you take that away from uttam bhakti, then you don't have uttam bhakti. So these things are inseparable, they're intrinsic, they cannot be changed. But temporarily, someone's bhakti may be covered with gyan or karm, or these ulterior motives, so they're external. And they can be, when they're removed, then they're no longer part of the definition. Then, because the actual definition of uttam bhakti is only these two lines, anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. Engaging in activities with body, mind, and words for the pleasure of Krishna, done with a favorable intention and a pure attitude. This is pure bhakti. And then these other things, anyabhilash shunyam, jnana karma, coverings of jnana and karma, and anyabhilash, other desires, those are coverings. Those are not essential to the definition of uttam bhakti. But in order to clearly position ourselves as pure devotees, we have to be careful that none of these coverings are coming to us. They're covering our bhakti. So let's break this word down. The first word, anya abhilashita, shunyam. The word anya means other, and abhilash means desire. And we say, seva abhilasha kore, e nevedanadara sakirano gatakara, seva abhilasha kore, right, in that Tulsi prayer. Every morning, e nevedanadara sakirano gatakara, seva abhilasha kore. Kora nija dasi. Nija, your own dasi. Kora nija dasi. Kora means kara, means do. And seva abhilash. Abhilash, the same word, right? We say anya abhilash. Abhilash means, seva abhilash means, I have a desire for seva. What type of seva do I want to do? I want to be your dasi, your nija dasi, your own special dasi, Vrindadevi. I want to be your manjari maidservant. Please bless me with this benediction. Seva abhilashi kori, nija dasi. So this abhilash means desire. So anya abhilash means other desire. What other desires? Desire for sense gratification. Desire for other objects. And Srila Prabhupada's words in Introduction and Nectar of Devotion. Any desire except for the service of the Lord is called material desire. It's what we call an all-inclusive, comma, and extremely pinching definition of abhilash, any other anya abhilash, any other desire. Prabhupada makes a very tight definition. Any desire except for the service of the Lord is called material desire. The word anya, A-N-Y-A, anya, indicates that bhakti should have only one desire, to serve the Lord. This is what Jiva Goswami is saying. To serve the Lord, since bhakti is not devoid of desire, of the desire of jnana and no other desire. So, The point is that sometimes when we see this phrase, anya bilashita shunyam, the word shunyam, like we say shunyavadi, he's a mayavadi impersonalist, he wants to deny his identity. Of course he can never lose it, but he wants to temporarily cover it and merge his identity in the covered with the effulgence of the Lord, but it's there nevertheless. It's a type of like sleeping, kind of lose your conscious identity when you sleep, but it's still there, because when you sleep your identity merges with tamagun or rajagun and you lose your conscious identity, but it's still there. You may be sleeping for 3 million years. When you wake up, you say, oh, I'm Savyasachin, I'm supposed to fix the temple sound system. But when you're sleeping, you're just flying in the sky and you're Superman and whatever. So this is, mayavadis are just kind of sleeping in the Brahman, but their identity is like this. So the devotee, he's conscious of his identity, and in his conscious individual identity, he serves the Lord. And the mayavadi, he's unconscious of his identity because his identity is merged in the light. But it's still there. That's why the Bhagavatam says, Aruya Krichena Parampadam Padam Patantya Dao Najida Yishmarangraya. That again, they come down to do something individual. The collective identity of unconscious sleeping in Brahman, they come out of that and come down to this world after so much hard work to get there. And they engage in humanitarian activities, as Prabhupada said, opening hospitals, Ramakrishna Mission, etc. So these are very much activities of individuals. So he says that, so someone might say, anyabhilashi shunya, to be devoid, shunya, devoid or free from anya, any other desire. So someone might say, okay, that means, bhakti means that I shouldn't have any desire. Because shunya means no, free. So Jiva, just so someone doesn't draw that conclusion, he says, no other, you should be free. Anya means any other desire. You should be completely devoid of any other abhilash, any other desire but one. One desire we're allowed to have. And that's the desire to serve Krishna. So that is the sadhya, or the goal of a devotee, is to love Krishna. This is our goal, prema, not mukti. We don't want the same form as the Lord or the same planet, we don't even want us to be in his association, samipya. Because what happens is all those things are adjusted. Just like the servant who knocks on the door of Mr. Smith and he's only asking for service. Once he's accepted for service, everything's adjusted. A relationship is established with the master. He may be, initially he may be master and servant, but as their intimacy grows over the years, he may become a fast friend. So he goes from Dasya Rati to Sakya Rati. He's a very intimate friend, although he's rendering service, but with a great loving mood of intimacy. Just like the Sakas also serve Krishna. They massage his feet, they rub his back, they make garlands for him. But there's so much love and intimacy with the Sakas. And even there's different categories of Sakka. There's Gaurava Sakya Ras and Vishrambena Sakya Ras, Vishramba Sakya Ras rather. Vishramba Sakya Ras and Gaurava. Some are friends, but they serve in a more respectful way. And some serve in a more intimate way. Intimate way means that Sridham, he takes his sweet that his mother made, Kirtida made, and he's chewing his ladu. Well, this is really good. Krishna, take this. And he puts it right into Krishna's mouth. That's Vishramba Gaurava. I mean, Vishramba Sakiras. Extreme intimacy, that you and I are one. Vishramba means there's no respect. That's another way of defining it. It's Vishramba or Vishramba. It's a different way they break it. Now in Gaurava, in Raktak and Patrak, there's no question of them eating. They're also friends of Krishna. They live in Krishna's house and they serve him. But they help with bathing and they massage his feet. But there's always this degree, this mood of respect. Some respect is there, a touch of respect. There's no question of Raktak or Patrak eating a sweet and giving to Krishna. So the servant may become so intimate. So when he has that relationship with the master, then the master adjusts everything. So a debhakta, a devotee, he doesn't have to worry, oh, I want to go to Krishna Loka, or oh, I want to live in association with the Lord, or oh, I need to have a spiritual form like the Lord, or oh, I need, you know, Salokya, Sarupya, Samipya, Sharsti, I need wealth, I need opulence. He's just worried, all I need is your loving service. And then Krishna will make all the arrangements. Oh, if you want to serve me, all you have is, all you want, all your only ambition is to lovingly serve me. Your goal is just prema. You want Krishna prema. You want to serve me. Well, if you want to serve me, you need a spiritual body. So I will have to arrange to give you a siddhadeha, because you want nothing. The only abhilash, the only desire you have, is to serve me in my eternal pastimes in Vrindavan. You don't. So you're just thinking of service, and you don't care if you have pastimes here or there. Wherever you are, I want to be there serving you. If you're in New York, I'll go to New York. If you're in Boma Vrindavan, I'll go to Boma Vrindavan. I don't care. I only want to, wherever you are, I want to serve you. Because if my only ambition is a loving service, then I have to be wherever you are. But I'm not hankering, I'm not asking for that first. Oh, give me your planet, give me back to Godhead. Or give me a spiritual body. Or give me this wealth. Or make sure I want to live next nearby you or in Barsan. I want to serve you. Maybe you'll post me, maybe I'll live in the forest with the Palinda women and near Govardhan. And that's where I'll live. I won't live in Nandagram with you. I'll live in the forest with the Palinda women. And then when you come to Govardhan, I will collect the deer musk and I'll run and give it to you. And then your boys can make some nice perfume for you, for your bath. I just want to serve you. You'll give me some service position. So then Krishna will say, all right, well here, you need a rupam. Here's your sarupya mukti. And since you only want to lovingly serve me, you have to be where I am. So here's your salokya mukti. And so if you want to serve me, you have to be near me. So here's your samipya mukti. Because samipya means to be nearby. So someone that only wants to go back to Godhead, they're asking for one particular, I only want to go back to Godhead. Then they're only asking for salokya mukti. We're only asking for prem seva, because this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching us, and all the gurus and acharyas are teaching us. Seva, 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 das, 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 and das. This is what they're telling us, this is what we're reading, this is what they're showing, but yet we take, because we are avritam, because our intelligence and mind is covered by jnana karma, although we hear all this repeatedly, we think, I want to go back to Godhead. I want salokya mukti. It's very interesting. We're not, as they say in English, we are not seeing the handwriting on the wall. We sing these bhajans of these acharyas. I only want service. I don't care if I'm born as an insect. We say, oh wow, Bhaktivinoda, you're really getting out there with this. Take birth as an insect. Don't you know you're supposed to go back to Godhead? And these are some heavy song you're singing. Anyway, that's your Bob, but that's not my Bob. Believe it. I'm not taking birth as a cockroach in New York. No, but he's saying, look, I'm ready to take a birth as a cockroach in the New York temple as long as I can eat some of the Govindaji's Mahaprasad. Does anybody have that idea? Not me. I don't know about you, but you know, I haven't really got my realizations to the point of the acharyas. So unless I become tadatmika with their realizations, then how can I attain the perfection? So much covering is there. So we have to be, a devotee is an analyst, a psychoanalyst. He's a psychologist, and he has to dissect his own brain and his own heart. Not exactly dissect, we can say. Well, you could say, but we have to do self-analysis. They have these terms in psychology and philosophy. Self-analysis and analyze our, of course, self or atma means the body and the mind, and of course the jiva. We have to look at ourselves and ask ourselves if we can be objective, which is pretty hard for the subject to be objective. But we have to ask ourselves, what makes me tick? What is motivating me? What is moving me? What am I actually doing here in the field of bhakti? Or in this bhakti marg? On this path of bhakti? Am I here for me? Or am I here for him? Or rather, she or her? Or them? Am I living for Yuga Kishore? Or am I living for, you know, myself? So this verse, I heard once. I heard a class on this, and then someone in the audience, they said, "Well, if a devotee simply memorizes this verse or thinks about the meaning of this verse, just thinking about this verse is actually very purifying." And then the speaker said, "Yes, that's true, because this verse, of course, is shabda. It's transcendental vibration from the heart of Rupa Goswami, describing the essence of bhakti." Uttam Bhakti. But it's purifying because when you read this verse, it makes us think, if you don't understand the meaning. Because we think, oh, is my bhakti? Is there coverings in my bhakti? Oh, I'm really covered. Like sometimes we say, oh, he's covered. Oh, this guy, he's really covered in Maya. Oh, this guy, he's really we say he's in the modes. We have our own lingo in the he's a karmi, or he's in the modes. We have all these funny phrases in our society of devotees. But he's really covered. He's lying in a street and drunk. You know, he's a wino, and he's really covered by tamagun, total inertia, sleeping, ignorance, delusion, total ignorance of God. But then, what about ourselves? Are we also covered? Maybe worse than a drunk, no, because he may be more simple-hearted when you get right down to it. We may be so complicated with our networking, our networks of desire inside our hearts, which are sending out their microwaves, and then we're receiving those waves and acting accordingly. So this is this part of the definition is actually more pinching, or more, it actually causes more self-analysis than the Sarup Lakshana. So Jiva Goswami says that we are allowed one desire, because bhakti is not devoid of desire. If you say, because that's the characteristic of bhakti, bhakti means the desire to serve Krishna, desire to please Krishna. That is the meaning. So bhakti can't be out without that. In the second half of this verse, Rupa Goswami describes the Swarup Lakshana Uttam Bhakti, or the main primary characteristic of pure devotional service, is to cultivate activities or engage in actions which are favorable to Krishna with a positive, friendly intention. So then one will ask a question, well, how do we do this? How to cultivate activities or perform activities which are favorable to Krishna? One should act only to increase his devotion or bhakti while giving up worldly desires and desires for liberation, yoga, and mystic powers. Bhakti and the nine limbs of bhakti, Navavida bhakti, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Archanam, Vandanam, Sakyam, Atmanavedanam, this devotional service should be done or performed only for the sake of bhakti. We're doing bhakti just to do bhakti. Like, for example, this is a story I often tell that in the last few months, because it struck me. It kind of shows you what is not bhakti. One of my friends in Delhi was chanting Hare Krishna, and he's initiated, and he was complaining, or not complaining, but he was revealing his mind. He said, Maharaj, when I'm chanting japa, on my japa beads, Hare Krishna mantra, sometimes when I chant my japa, the chanting really makes me feel good. I really feel good. Maybe close the door now. Is it cold air coming in, or is it? Yeah. Turn the fan on there. So when I chant japa, it really makes me feel good. The black one. There's a black. Yeah. Prakash? Maybe there's no electricity, that's another thing. That's inverter. Yeah, the inverter gives some few lights here and there. But only if we have government power, we can run all the fans. So, but sometimes, you know, when I chant, I don't feel any happiness. You know, I'm chanting, I don't feel any happiness. It's really a drag and it's difficult. I don't feel like chanting at all. If I'm chanting, I don't feel any happiness. It's just too difficult. It doesn't make me feel happy. I don't even want to chant. So I don't know what to do. I feel bad, as I promise I'm supposed to chant and all this stuff. And what should I do? And I said, you should learn to do bhakti. I said, I think you've developed a new meaning of the holy name. Because Prabhupada gave us a very, in one sense, basic meaning to meditate on when chanting the holy name, because whenever one chants any mantra, there must be some conception or meaning to that mantra which one meditates on or mulls over in his mind while chanting that. It's called mantra dhyan, the meditation that goes with the mantra. And various acharyas and shastras, from Sanat Kumara Samhita all the way to Bhaktivinoda and our own Guru Varg, they've given us various meditations to accompany the various mantras which we chant in our sampradaya, including Maha Mantra, Guru Mantra, Gopal Mantra, Gaur Mantra, Gaur Gayatri, Kam Gayatri. And that is the way to practice chanting the mantras with the meditation. So Prabhupada also gave us a meditation with the Maha Mantra. I told this individual, I said, yes, you have a very nice meaning for the holy name, for the Maha Mantra. And this is what your meaning is. Oh Radharani, oh energy of the Lord, oh internal potency of the Lord, please engage your Krishna in my service. Please, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Ram. Oh Radharani, please engage Krishna in my service. Tell Krishna to make me happy. Tell Krishna to make me peaceful. Tell Krishna to give me all the nice things in life. Tell Krishna to make everything work out nicely for me. Promotion, distinction, honor, and lots of nice Mahaprasadam too. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So I said, this, I think you didn't quite hear what Prabhupada was saying. He said, oh Radharani, oh, or sometimes he says, oh Mother Hara. Like the Shaktas have Mother Durga, and they say the mother is always kind and nourishes the baby, so we should approach the mother, because Father Shiva is sometimes mean and nasty, so, because their idea of Shaktas, they worship Shiva and Parvati. Say, oh Mother Durga, please nourish me like your child, and you have all the power, you have all the energy. Of course, we understand that she's simply an expansion of Radharani. So, oh Mother Hara, oh Srimati Radharani, oh Ladini Shakti, oh divine pleasure potency of the Lord, please engage me in the service of your Krishna, as Prabhupada would say. Because Krishna belongs to Radharani. Right? It's not that Radharani belongs to Krishna. It's a different mentality. So even Prabhupada was telling, this is the meaning of the Hare Krishna mantra. Bhakta Joe is meditating how Radharani controls Krishna. My Krishna. So this is quite a difference. So in other words, even when we're chanting the Maha Mantra, why are we chanting? To please Krishna. Just to please Krishna. That's all. And that Maha Mantra, if we're chanting with that attitude or that intention or that mind, Krishna, I just want to please you with this chanting. He said, yes, I'm very pleased with this chanting, and now I'm going to inspire you. Because I'm very pleased with your chanting, I'm going to inspire you to do other services to please me. The chanting itself is very pleasing to Krishna. It says everywhere in Shastra, and he himself says, there's nothing more I like than to hear the chanting of my name. So Radharani and the gopis are always chanting, Govinda Damo Dara Madhaveti, Govinda Damo Dara Madhaveti. And the sakis are chanting, and Shoda, everyone is chanting, Govinda Nam, Damodar Nam, Madhav Nam. And Krishna is hearing it. This is his lullaby. This is how he falls asleep, his mother chants. She sings, she tells some story about Ram cutting the heads off Ravana, and she tells something about Ram Leela, something from Puranas, and Krishna's listening as he's falling asleep. And then after she tells a little story, then she always says, Govinda Damo Dara Madhaveti, Govinda Damo Dara Madhaveti. And Krishna falls asleep listening to his own name. Right? You can imagine. So, of course, we would also like to fall asleep like that too. Because that's how kings, because this is nature. The kings in the Vedic culture, they would also fall asleep the same way. That they would have bards or whatever you call them, there's names for them. Sutas and Magadhas. The Sutas and Magadhas, these are musicians, but they're expert in reciting different poetry and songs. So they would gather around the king's bedside and they would play music, very soothing music on sarod, or I don't think they had any Yamaha synthesizers, but they have some sarods, and then they would sing all about his glories and his exploits. And so he'd fall asleep hearing, oh King Akbar, you're so great, or whatever. He said, yes, I'm so great. And he falls asleep. Oh, or Aurangzeb, right? Such a great, nasty personality. So this is, he's saying that how to be favorable. One should act only to increase his bhakti. So we're chanting Hare Krishna only for bhakti, only just for the pleasing Krishna, while giving up worldly desires and desires for liberation. The nine limbs of bhakti should only be performed for the sake of bhakti. We perform sadhana and bhava bhakti only to attain prema bhakti. Uttam bhakti means to be devoid of all other desires than bhakti. sounds easy, right? What is uttam bhakti? What is pure devotional service? This is our English translation. Pure devotional service or uttam bhakti? Uttam means topmost. Topmost pure bhakti, which is the bhakti of the Vrijvasis, of Radharani and all the associates of Krishna and Braj. That uttam bhakti which we're aspiring for, another name of uttam bhakti is prema bhakti. So that prema bhakti which we're aspiring for, it's easy, it's very easy. Listen, it says that uttam bhakti means to be devoid or free or empty of all other desires than bhakti. Oh, it's easy, right? You just have to, I want to serve Krishna this way, and I want to serve Krishna that way, and then this, oh, I finished this service, now let me do that service. No, usually as we do one service, okay, I did it, that's enough, and let me relax. Or even if we get a long list, even the guru or the temple commander says, look, I want you to do this and this and this. Oh, that's a lot of things to do. Oh, please, you try to do all these things. So then we'll try to do all those, that long list as fast as we can, and as best we can. We finish, because once we finish, then, well, he only asked me to do 10 things. I did the 10 things, and it's 12 o'clock, so Hari Bol. Good night. And then we relax. We don't think to go back, because if we go back and say, look, I already finished those 10 things, then he'll give us 10 more things. So we say, I better wait till tomorrow, because I did these 10 things, and now I can just, because he thinks that these 10 things will take all day. So I finish them quickly, so now I have free time to relax. So I'll meet him again tomorrow. Did you finish those 10 things? Oh, Gurudev, it's difficult, but by your mercy, Gurudev, I finished those 10 things. Oh, that's very good. You're a good devotee. Here's 10 more things. this is there. Now, in this verse, you see, there's the word anyabhilashita. Because it's almost over, because I want to try to keep the time. We can discuss, because abhilash means desire, and anya means no other. So anya abhilash sunyam. Anya abhilash means other desire. We should be free from all other desires. This is what the word means. But why is, in his definition, he says anya abhilashi ta sunyam. So we'll find out tomorrow what that means. Does anyone have any questions? Yes.
I'd like to understand a bit more about the application of the definition for pure bhakti. In the sense you gave an example of like what some would consider indirect service, and you know, the cockroach eating the crumbs. And then there's the other example you gave of actually doing direct service to Krishna himself. You know, there's a vast difference between those two in one sense. One is on the way and one is there. You know, so now, how is this definition applied all through?
Yeah, well, that's what Jiva Goswami is saying, although he's not exact. He's saying that we should apply this definition, this definition does uphold for all three levels of the sadhaka, or the one who's in sadhana bhakti, either vaidhi or rag, or bhava or prema, because uttam bhakti, the gopis are the perfect example of uttam bhakti. So for those at the level of sadhana bhakti, like ourselves, for us, in other words, it's the very nature, it is the intrinsic nature of Radharani, that she just is anukul, every atom of her existence is anukulya, anukulyena, and anushilanam. So for her, it's just she's the embodiment of uttam bhakti, and a bhava bhakta is emulating and practically, not practically, but very much in that going in that direction. For us, it's the most difficult is the application for us as sadhakas, because we are the ones that have so much avritam. Because as sadhakas, we haven't come to the level of bhava, and depending on where we stand on the scale of shraddha, the prema, you know, can you move the tulsi over there, just carefully over there. Looking through the slits in the kunj or something. So and for the sadhaka, we have so much covering, so for us we have to almost always be applying this definition. That's why I said this is a standard by which, it's kind of like when you see a doctor is walking around the hospital, a lot of times they always have this stethoscope hanging around their neck, because they're always ready to listen to somebody's heart or something. and he's just walking around. Even sometimes he's sitting in his office, and you're just having he's meeting his patients. He still has his thing hanging around his neck because he just came from the from one of the rooms in the hospital. And because he's so used to having it, he's always that stethoscope. Is that what it's called? And he puts it to the heart and listens to the heartbeat. It goes like this, and okay. So in the same way as sadhakas, this verse should be like our stethoscope. We're always putting it. We're always putting it, putting in the earplugs and putting this verse. Oh, am I operating out of some conditional? Are my operations being of some condition? I'm imposing some conditions of avritam, of gyan or karma. I'm looking for some sense gratification here, or I have some doubts here, some wrong ideas or conceptions about my service. Let me remove those, because that's called samshaya, the area of doubt. Because there's so much, as sadhakas, there may be so much illusion and ignorance, which is part of anartha nivritti. Avidya is one of that we have to remove. Avidya, avinivesh, rag, dvesh, all these things. So this verse, it's a good, as I said, just meditating on this verse is purifying, because it purifies our conception, and it purifies our mentality, and purifies our approach to the very actions that we're doing in bhakti, as sadhaka, especially on the level of sadhana, either vaidhi or rag. Because we can say, oh, am I trying to perform pure devotional service? That's why sometimes Prabhupada would use a very broad spectrum definition of pure devotee. He would say, his own disciples would ask him, well, Srila Prabhupada, what is a pure devotee? He said, oh, you're all pure. He said, all my disciples are pure devotees. You must have heard this phrase. All my disciples are pure devotees, because they're working day and night to try to please me. So on an external level, not according to Uttam Bhakti, they're pure devotees, well, let's say, in the making. Pure devotees in the making. But if we were, and so we are running around like jackrabbits, day and night, trying to please Prabhupada. No doubt, that's a fact. At least for many disciples. But if we were to examine the mentality, some were thinking, oh, I want to get Prabhupada's recognition, so he'll make me temple president. I want to become GBC, and I want to get, maybe if I do a good job, he'll give me charge of that zone over there or this zone. So there's all kinds of ulterior motives. So it really, we really weren't pure devotees, according to Rupa Goswami's definition. So, and one level, Prabhupada is saying that's pure devotion, that we're simply trying to please the guru. But each individual disciple, he has to do the analysis. Although Prabhupada is being gracious and being liberal with his definition, and rather saying it simply to encourage us, obviously. But the fact is that we weren't pure devotees as Rupa Goswami is defining. We had so many mixed and ulterior motives, which of course became manifest gradually or over the time. So, but for the sincere sadhaka, this verse should always be with us. It's almost like you have ingoing breath and outgoing breath. So this verse, that's why I said, if you were only going to learn one verse and learn it thoroughly, then this is the verse to learn. I mean, there's theory and practice. There's, you can say, gyan and vigyan. So the vigyan is the practice. There's theoretical knowledge and practical knowledge. This verse is meant to be lived and breathed and acted upon, because this verse is our ticket to perfection. This verse, because as I mentioned earlier, this verse is the essence of all Vedic literature. Because all Vedic literature, ultimately the entire Vedas, are simply trying to bring everyone to the point of love of God. Because that's the ultimate Dharma. The ultimate expression of Dharma is to love God and to serve Him without any covering of gyan or karma. So that's why, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give us the very essence of the whole Vedas. And the essence is rag bhakti, because rag bhakti very quickly attaches us to Krishna, because it's based on rag. So that's why he emphasized, the Goswamis, show the sweetness of Krishna. Because no one, you can read all the other Vaishnava literatures, it's all so much Aishvarya and grandeur and Vaikuntha. They're not showing this, because sweetness means Naralila, the human-like pastimes. Like, who is like us? He's so attractive and so sweet. Because we can be attracted to someone that's like us. A human being is attracted to another human being. But if we see a hippopotamus or a rhinoceros, we're not so much attracted to the form or the activities or anything. So when Krishna comes, if Krishna comes before us, because Krishna has features with 1,000 heads, you can read in Brihad Bhagavatamrita and Brahmaloka, Vishnu has 1,000 heads. So that's a little bit frightening. You know, Vishnu comes with 1,000 arms. Haribo, you know, wow, you know, it's like a monster or something. So it's intimidating, it's fearful. That's not sweet and lovable. When he comes in a little boy, he's a little boy and he crawls on your lap and he squeezes your breast and he becomes your baby. How much sweet that is. Because it's just like my little son or just like my friend. Oh, he played with his friend. So this is the sweetest presentation of the Lord is when he comes as Krishna. So therefore Lord Chaitanya came to teach this Rag Bhakti. And the Goswamis are teaching, because Rag Bhakti is based on attraction to the sweetness of Krishna. I mean, if one gets agreed to relish that sweetness and to be part of that sweetness. And that greed is the basis of practicing rag. So to get that greed, you have to get greed for an object, you have to be aware of it. You know, if you're not, and that's what advertising is all about. They try to make you aware. They give you knowledge of an object and make you greedy for it. Not, right? Knowledge, icha, chesta, kriya. They advertise, when they advertise for a motorcycle, do they bring out a motorcycle that's totally painted black in color? The spokes are black, the tires are black. It's all fancy paint job, and they put special lighting effects on it, and they take pictures, and people look at it, oh, that motorcycle, and they turn the wheel in a certain way, or make it look like it's flying through the sky. You know, they don't just show some motorcycle sitting there with the handlebars straight like this. So they try to present the object so you get an impression of that object. You get an impression of that object. Impression means knowledge, a samskara. And that impression is so deep and so powerful that it creates a strong icha. So from knowledge comes icha. And then that impression in your mind and conscience, you start to think about, well, that motorcycle looks so cool. It was like, the guy was like flying through the sky on that motorcycle. And it was so shiny and yellow, and that guy had a red suit. And I want to be that guy with the red suit and the yellow motorcycle and fly through the sky. And so then that's chesta. That's like planning and thinking over. Then chesta intensifies your desire and it gets stronger and stronger. Then action. I have to get it. Beg, borrow, or steal. So Lord Chaitanya, he told all the Goswamis, he said, make Krishna attractive. We say Krishna is attractive, but make him present him in such an attractive way that people are forced to fall in love with him. They're forced to be attracted to him. And then they'll follow the path of rag. Forget all this Vaidhi sadhana and going to Vaikuntha. He didn't talk anything about it. Isn't that Lord Chaitanya? He said it everywhere. I came to preach Raganuga Bhakti. So rag is based on rag. Rag means that you become colored, you become infected. Just like when you get some bugs in your system, what color do you become when you get jaundice? You turn yellow. You become colored by the disease of jaundice. I know I had it when I was 18. I was in Karmi. I had it. So you become colored. So that rag, the word rag comes from runga. Rung means a color. When you buy a color for the house, it's rung, paint. So the mool root, the mool of rag is rung, which means color. So you become colored. You become colored with Krishna. Like you get infected. You get infected by jaundice, you become colored. So you become infected with the Leela Madhurya and Prema Madhurya and Rupa Madhurya of Krishna. You get colored. And that's rag. And you get greed. They're at all this Don Kaili Chintamani and Hamsa Duda and Uddhava Sandesh, all these books are simply to create greed to buy the product. Advertisement. Yeah, that's what I meant to say. These are all just like advertisements, transcendental advertisements to make you greedy after this little blue boy and his golden girlfriend. All right? And then you keep reading, God, I'm going crazy. I think I've got to get those guys. I want to serve them. I want to be with them. I want to live with them. And then I read about their friends too, and oh, what loving people. These are quote, the beautiful people. Like sometimes they try to present in the newspapers and magazines, the beautiful people. It means the movie stars and the intelligent, not the intelligent so much, but the rich people, the wealthy people. What do the beautiful people do? They have stories like that. I remember when I was a karmi, you read in Life magazine. You know, what do the beautiful people do? And it's just a whole bunch of malechas and yavanas that go around and, you know, spend their money and enjoy their bodies. You know, movie stars and wealth, the wealthy people, the billionaires of the world, the so-called beautiful people. But the Ragatmika Bhaktas of Braj, they are the beautiful people. And their dealings are beautiful and sweet and tender and loving and kind. And so it naturally melts the heart. And you become attracted. So this verse, maybe I got a little bit tangential to your question, but I feel that this verse is the is so because Rupa Goswami, this is the first verse in his description of what is bhakti. So you're asking a question about, well, what about the bhakti that's just beginning in sadhana bhakti, and what about the one who's almost there in bhava bhakti, and what about the one who's there in prema bhakti? How does the verse apply? Well, this whole book is going to talk about those three stages of bhakti. And this verse, as I said, is the Paribhasa Sutra. This will carry all the way through. And you're asking, well, how do we carry it? And how do we apply it to where we are? And I'm trying to somehow or other explain that. So that has to become this is our standard of measurement. That when we're analyzing doing our psychoanalysis or bhakti analysis, then we can see, am I covering sneaking in here to my devotion or to my act? Is there some gyan or some fruit of work here? I'm trying to get something out of it, is there some impurity? And that, just that sincerity, because your question itself indicates a sincere, approach, that sincerity to try to rectify or purify our practice of devotion, or our devotions, that sincerity with the will to use this as the standard which we're shooting for, this is our goal, this Uttam Bhakti, Rupa Goswami himself will bless us. Because we're taking shelter of him. This verse is him. This verse, Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadhyan Avritam Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhaktir Uttama. This is Rupa Goswami. And we say, oh, Rupa, please help me. I look at your verse and I say, oh my God, I'm a long way from your verse. Can you please help me? Because this is verse one of bhakti. And if I don't understand this very much, then how can I practice the 64 limbs of bhakti that you're going to tell me later on? And what to speak about, and then get into Raganuga Bhakti and Kamanuga Bhakti and Sambandhanuga Bhakti. And so, please, this verse is very deep. And there's in Prabhupada's book, it's like how many pages? 4 or 5 pages, introduction, Prabhupada's purport. And here is 9-page purport, which I just summarize in my notes. There's 9 pages here. Explanations, the longest purport in the whole book. Because this is it. This is the basis, the foundation of bhakti. We can understand this. I mean, we were studying this verse over the last few months and preparing it, it makes you nervous. when you put yourself to the test, it's just like you think you may be in good shape and you're quite healthy, and then you stand on the scale and the doctor says, oh, you're 20 kilos overweight, and we tested your blood and there's all kinds of cholesterol in your blood and you're in bad shape. Ooh, gee whiz, I better get serious. Anyway, so you're fooling yourself thinking that you're quite in good shape. So we may be fooling ourselves because this tendency for self-delusion is quite prevalent in the human species. So we may think, well, I am doing really good. And a lot of people around us may, because Maya is so tricky, she wants to keep us in that illusion because we're actually wrongly motivated. We don't have pure motivation. So she wants to keep us surrounded by our own illusion, which we manifest. And she'll send various agents who will come and enforce our illusion by saying, oh, you're doing great. Oh, you live at Radhakund. Oh, you're really great. You put all these books together. You're really great. And you think, oh, yeah, I'm really great. And I live at Radhakund. I'm really great. And Maya says, oh, boy, I really got this guy now. I got him tied up totally. He already had this idea himself. Now I sent all these tricksters. I sent all these tricksters to baffle him. Like the mystic illusions that Dhruva was fighting in the Bhagavatam, when Dhruva Maharaj was attacking the city of the Yakshas, or the Alakapuri, Kubera's headquarters, and all the Yakshas were attacking him with mystic weapons and showering stool and all kinds of stuff, in the fourth canto. So Maya, she sends all this kind of mystic illusions, and then but they come in the form of friends and compliments and pats on the back. And then you eat it up like sugar candy. So then you don't see verses like this, and you don't want to hear about verses like this. Jnana Karmadi Amritam. Because frankly speaking, for the first, I think about the first 6 years of my life, I thought that basically the goal was to go to heaven, basically, because I was raised as a Christian, so they have the idea this world is bad. And we're supposed to go to heaven, which is some, I don't know, planet or something. So I came to Krishna consciousness and I said, yeah, heaven is called Godhead. And it's a spiritual world. There's this material world, and there's another world called the spiritual world, and you're supposed to go there and live with God. And it's a really nice place, and it's happy, and lots of rivers and waterfalls. And so I really thought when I first joined it, this is basically like a refined definition of heaven, with a little more details. There's some blue people there instead of just, you know, Americans or whatever. Instead of just white people, there's a few blue people over there. So I think most devotees, I think we're supposed to go back to Godhead. But then you read the, and then we read, we even when we first turned, we kept getting these different kind of ideas and thinking, where does this fit in? Mama janmani janmani shvare bhavatad bhakti. Because you learn the Shikshastakam very quickly when you live in the temple. And the Lord Chaitanya was the father of this whole Gaudiya Vaishnavism, which we dropped into. He's saying, birth after birth, let me be born, as long, you're my Ishvara. Janamani janamani Ishvara, you're the controller, you're the boss. Give me a birth after birth, it doesn't matter. All they want is a haituki bhakti. It causes, what's that? Chaito dharma. Anyway, I go back to Godhead. And we overlook some very primal instructions, which are actually the very basis of pure bhakti. And there's nothing more original than the Shikshastakam, because if this is what we are aspiring, and then it even comes more, handle me roughly by your embrace, give me darshan or never give me darshan, leave me in New York for 1,000 births, leave me, oh my Lord, leave me on the streets of New York for 1,000 births distributing books, it doesn't matter, you're always my prananath, you'll always be my prananath. But we think, wait a minute, you have to bring me into the Rasalila, and I have to be playing mridanga there, and I want to have a front row seat. I want to see everything. I don't want to be in the back. And the last place I want to be is in New York City for the next 10,000 births. I mean, at least we think like that. We want a front row seat in the Ras Mandal. I don't even want to be in the back. I want to be right in the front. I want the dust of their feet to come on my face when Radha and Krishna spin around. And, you know, I want to see Krishna smile and Radharani smile. I don't want to be in New York City distributing books and JFK. So we have to appreciate that Rupa Goswami has been so merciful to us to give us this rather explicit and clear and concise definition of pure bhakti. Actually, pure bhakti is given in two lines. And this is what Vishwanath says, that this is the beauty of this definition, that it's flawless. And it's rather lengthy analysis Jiva gives also. But from all angles of Naya or grammar or logic or philosophy or tattva, you can't get a more perfect definition of uttam bhakti than what Rupa Goswami has given here in verse 11 of chapter 1. Because even they analyze, he says anukalyena Krishna anushilanam. He could have said anukalyena anushilanam. But then putting Krishna there, and instead of shilanam, he said anushilanam. Because shilanam means sometimes you engage in some activities, but anu means continuously. So each word, why isn't it just shilanam, which means cultivation or acting with mind and body for Krishna? Okay, I do it. Yeah, I go to the temple on Sunday and I chat and dance. But anu means 24 hours a day. And then it says kula. Kula means bank, right? It means, like we say, yamuna kule. So it means bank, and prati means opposite or against, and anu means the same. So anu kula means to be on the same bank. Kula means bank of a river. You know, you have the Yamuna, there's one bank, Lakshmi's on the other side, and the gopis are on this side of the Yamuna. She's in Vailvan and Krishna's in Vrindavan, with the gopis and Sevakunj and Sringarvad and Nidivan, Rasastali, Yamuna Pulin. So if you're on the same bank with someone, that's called Anukul. It means to be in the same bank. So he's saying Anukul means we're with Krishna. Krishna, we're with you. We're not against. So Pratikul means to be on opposite bank. Like I'm on this side of the river and you're on that side of the river. So if you're on that side of the river, on the opposite bank, you can't do much for me. But if you're right next to me, so anukula means we're on Krishna's side. We're doing this for Krishna, to please him. So even, this is some other description that's given. Anukulyena. Because you could say kula means to be on the same bank, but anukulyena means that you're moment to moment with the person, associating with the person, with a favorable mind. It's not that bhakti, we do some bhakti for a few hours and then some vogue. Bhakti and vogue, bhakti and vogue. So this, in one sense, this limit, this constricts. What this verse does, it constricts all of our independent movements, or rather, restricts all of our independent movements, because it's independence itself which is keeping us from pure devotion. And as soon as that independence is clipped, then the bird of independence cannot fly away from Krishna. Like they sometimes, it's not very nice, but they cut the wings of birds in the zoos, these big birds, so they can't fly. They had birds like that in Mayapur. I think they ran away or drowned or something. Those big ostrich or something. They would just run around and try to fly. They couldn't fly. It's called ibis. I think the bird's called ibis. You know, they had those gray birds there. Yeah, they wanted to fly. So it's like us, when we always want to fly away from Krishna, and then the Guru's trying to pull us down and make us do service, so we also screech. You can hear the bhaktas screeching from the other side of the temple. Gurudev is telling him to surrender, give up your independence, serve Krishna day and night. Oh, 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 oh. Oh, oh.